To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for another investigation, kindly produced by a mysterious yet greatly treasured benefactor. Usually, our sermons are concerned with the tumultuous state of the galaxy, focusing on the turbulent tides of unending war which have thus far left the very stars themselves awash within a rising ocean of blood. In contrast, the information I wish to divulge to you today will instead deal with a series of unimaginably ancient relics, sourced from a truly unfathomable age. Perhaps only the Necrons, the Catan, or the most antediluvian of warp entities might know of their true origin, though none of these groups are exactly forthcoming with their knowledge on the subject. But first, I must offer some background so that you might understand what we do know of the subject. Thus, I welcome you all to sit back and relax as we explore one of the greatest mysteries of the 41st millennium by covering the curious artifacts of the Halo Devices. There are countless examples of goods deemed as contraband or branded as forbidden by the Imperium, which, despite their labeling, are fairly easy for a dastardly individual to obtain, if of course they know of the right places to look. For but one example among many, the so-called cold trade of the galaxy is a clandestine market formed by humans who wish to illegally deal in the dangerous and arcane technologies of the Xenos. In the shadowy backstreets of a hive world or aboard an unmarked vessel, the willing parties will transact between weapons, technologies, or other mysterious curios, seeing their value as being far in excess of the inherent risks posed by owning something forged by alien hands. Naturally, it can be quite a perilous endeavor to obtain the alien goods to begin with, both because it is a challenge to actually find and procure the prohibited material, but also because it is seen as a most heinous crime to harbor, use, or deal in these objects. But with that said, there are certain individuals who will find themselves in quite a unique role, which provides them with something of a golden opportunity to source and even handle the artifacts of the Xenos. For example, rogue traders are individuals who possess a warrant of trade, which permits them with an exceptional degree of freedom, essentially allowing them to travel wherever they desire, with whatever cargo they deem as being necessary. As such, they would not necessarily be penalized for carrying alien technologies within their hold, though of course the merchant would still need to justify as to how and why they came into possession of such goods. Standard Imperial citizens, however, will not be granted with the same leniency. The dangers of the unknown truly cannot be understated, and so, to be caught with a forbidden artifact would almost certainly result in a summary sentence provided by a none too merciful inquisitor. Yet, it is little wonder that the cold trade persists. There are many things that Xenos tech can achieve that are simply impossible for mankind now that our species' level of innovation has fallen into such a woeful state of stagnant decay compared to the miracles we achieved during the Dark Age of technology. Despite xenophobia being quite literally the law within Imperial space, only the most zealous or willfully ignorant of scholars would deny the unique advantages that each species brings to the technological table. While orc tech, if one could even call such crude amalgams of greasy and rusted metal as technology, is all but useless outside of their barbaric hands, there are plenty of other more advanced species to choose from. The monomolecular blades found amongst the foul Drukhari of Komorar can pierce through the finest ceramite, while their grasp and understanding of poisons and other such malignant compounds is truly unmatched by any other species of the galaxy. As they drift through the void on their vast craft worlds, Eldari bone singers can reshape Wraithbone into rifles and pistols, far exceeding the quality of all but the finest gunsmiths in the Imperium. Necron technology, however, exists on a truly unfathomable plane. The soulless machines, relics themselves of a bygone era, carry weapons which are able to disintegrate their foes at a molecular level until naught but ash and smoldering embers remain. Beyond that, they have figured out how to manipulate the flow of time itself without resorting to the influences of the warp. If the rumors of the so-called celestial orrery are to be believed, they can also detonate the stars themselves with but a flick of the metallic finger. Needless to say, anyone who is able to lay their hands upon Necron technology would truly become a force to be reckoned with. However, while the works of these prominent species make up the bulk of the cold trade, they are not the subject of today's sermon. Instead, that honor belongs to the rare and horrifically abominable pieces of alien archaeotech that are just as coveted by cold traders and short-sighted heretics alike as they are dreaded by even the most seasoned inquisitors of the Ordo Xenos. I am, of course, referring to our subject of today, being the artifacts known as the Halo Devices. If the name didn't give it away, these foul abominations of technology can only be found amongst the mysterious reaches of the Halo Stars. This region comprises of an unimaginably ancient ring of stars that surrounds our galaxy, containing the last sources of dim, flickering light that one may find before entering into the umbral abyss of the intergalactic void. These stars, perhaps being the very oldest in our galaxy, burned their brightest millions upon millions of years past and are now but dying embers of what they once were, if of course they still burn at all. They huddle together in cluster formations on the galactic rim like herd animals sheltering together to resist the cold of a blizzard. Yet not even the fiercest snowstorms of Fenris could match the utter frigidity of the empty space they exist within. Yet despite, or perhaps because, of their pitiful state, the territories surrounding these decrepit celestial bodies are among the most dangerous of places to be found within the entire galaxy. They are surpassed in sheer deadliness only by those accursed areas of space where the Immaterium has intruded into our realm, such as the Eye of Terror, the Maelstrom, and more recently, the Great Rift. Being so far removed from the Imperium's most remote of frontier systems, the Halo Stars make the perfect sanctuaries for any and all of the enemies of mankind to make their foul lairs. Aliens who prey upon the Imperium, marauding pirates, and even warp entities that have found a way to slip beyond the bounds of the Immaterium without being drawn back to their home realm, can be found among the Halo Stars in gratuitous abundance. Much like the horrific region of the Ghoul Stars, the Halo Stars are also to be found outside of the range of the Astronomicon, meaning that a navigator will not be able to see the blazing light of terror to guide them on their journey. This adds a new level of danger to any expedition, as the Psykers will essentially be steering their ships blind through the nightmare of the warp, often leading to their certain demise, as they are swept up by an invisible wave of immaterial energy. As such, it is generally agreed upon by most starfarers that the risks of venturing into these regions far outweigh any potential gains. Perhaps only the brave, the foolish, or some combination thereof, would dare to venture into such a malignant region of space and expect anything but a swift and horrible demise. Yet there will always be some zealous explorer of the Adeptus Mechanicus, an industrious rogue trader, an intrepid xenoarchaeologist, or greedy and thrill-seeking purloiner of the cold trade who seeks to try their luck. But for those who manage to plumb that dreaded region of space while keeping their crews and sanity intact, they will be sure to find many unique treasures within the halo stars that cannot be found anywhere else in the galaxy, left behind by the long-extinct aliens who once called these stars as their home. Yet, it is a true tragedy for the rest of mankind that one of these unique curios is so utterly dangerous to humanity that the Inquisition will execute even those selling mere forgeries of them. And these would be the eponymous halo devices. These woeful artifacts can take many forms. Some resemble trilobite-like fossils, others small spheres whose metallic surface ripples and distorts like liquid mercury. Yet a number of them will resemble pendants and talismans, all too easy to mistake for simple jewelry. But their external appearances truly do not matter, and all halo devices seem to share a few key features. They all defy analysis by Orspecs or other such scanners, and are impervious to all but the most destructive sources of damage. With that said, any force which is powerful enough to damage the device would also be enough to entirely destroy it, rendering such methods as completely worthless for investigating how this technology functions. And finally, they are completely untouched by the ravages of time. The latter of these details is significant due to the devices typically being found in the ruins of a long-lost Xenos civilization that are believed to have lived in the galaxy millions upon millions of years past. We may only be able to speculate as to the true function the aliens had in mind for these devices, but at the very least, it would seem that the species responsible, whomever they may be, cared far more that the devices survived for as long as possible over their people's own preservation. Whatever the alien architects had in mind for their use, they are long gone. Yet their legacy has become a dark and twisted one indeed by the effect their accursed creations have on mankind. Knowledge of these horrific artifacts is incalculably rare due to the Inquisition's righteous efforts to purge any and all information related to them, and this is performed with very good reason. Yet, knowledge will always be more readily available to the nobility of the Imperium due to their wealth, connections, and resources. And more often than not, they are the vectors by which the halo devices plague the Imperium. For you see, the Inquisition can only suppress so much, and as a result of this, the occasional rumor or story of the halo devices will reach the ears of someone in the privileged position to obtain one. Most who have an interest in obtaining a halo device for personal use have only ever heard of their positive effects, of which, we must admit, there are many. Whilst the Imperium has many technological and medical wonders that can dramatically extend one's lifespan through the use of sanguinary cleaning, rejuvenate stem cell treatments, and genetic repair, these are astronomically expensive and can only go so far. After approximately 400 years, even the hardiest and wealthiest of individuals will almost assuredly require extensive mechanical assistance to remain alive. a state which, in and of itself, is little more than a poison chalice, rendering one immobile and helpless, hooked up to countless tubes and machines, working non-stop to keep a shriveled husk of a body alive. Even the Emperor's Astartes, whose gene seed enhancements allow them to live far longer than any unaltered mortal, will eventually gain wrinkles and grey hairs, their reflexes and movements slowing as time marches ever onward. Beyond that, even the Primarchs themselves are known to be susceptible to the effects of old age, if we are to take Lionel Johnson's current state as any indication. However, the Halo devices outperform humanity's medical technology by leaps and bounds. These devices, once bonded to a human, grant their wielder with the rare gift of biological immortality. It is for this precise reason that so many are interested in these innocent-looking curios, but unbeknownst to them, this pursuit will also lead themselves and everyone around them headlong towards an unavoidable disaster. The search for immortality has led countless fools to their doom over the millennia. One only need look to those pitiable chaos cultists or fallen angels of the Astartes who seek demonic apotheosis as an example. These traitorous fools have sold their very souls at the prospect of immortality, not knowing, or perhaps not caring, that only perhaps one amongst millions will achieve this goal. The rest will inevitably be cut down by some noble warrior of the Imperium, stabbed in the back by their fellows, transfigured into a hideous chaos spawn as the Immaterium's so-called gifts overwhelm them, or cast aside by their dark masters once they grow bored of their old plaything. And even those who succeed in achieving this apotheosis will discover too late that such a blasphemous transformation only renders them into a helpless slave with no free will, shackled to the whims of the fickle four for the rest of eternity. But for the corrupt elites of the Imperium who enjoy a life of excess, decadence, and splendor, it is little wonder that they would utterly loathe the sight of their own hair turning gray or to feel the vigors of their youth fading into memory. Thus, they will be willing to pay a truly unimaginable sum to continue living their life of debauchery without having to risk said life. For but the candle flame in a tornado's chance of receiving the grace of the darker powers. And so, perhaps once every century or two, a halo device will make its way into the hands of some rich idiot with more money than sense. These devices often go for tens of millions of thrones, or other equally valuable boons like noble titles, STC fragments, or extremely rare tomes containing forbidden, heretical, or otherwise hard-to-locate information. But whatever payment the cold trader receives, if they are wise, they will exit the star system with haste and never look back. For they have damned not just the fool they swindled, but everyone and everything in that lamentable noble's vicinity. Once a halo device has been procured, it will need to remain in close physical contact with whoever desires to bond with it. If this occurs, it will begin to merge with the surface-level skin and musculature of its new host over the course of a length of time that can vary wildly. Some may take weeks, others days. And a few have even been observed affixing themselves to the flesh of a new host in mere moments. Apocryphal sources claim that this process can be sped up significantly by inserting the device into an open wound or by surgically implanting it into one's body. However, there is no moral method to confirm the scientific veracity of such methods, as any testing would involve the creation of new hosts for the devices, which in of itself is a most unforgivable crime. In any case, Once the device has fully bonded to its human host, said individual will slowly but surely be restored to the pinnacle of their health and youth. Scars and wrinkles fade, chronic aches and pains subsiding along with them. Integrity returns to decrepit bones and withered muscle. Minor mutations are banished alongside any and all diseases. The device can even miraculously regrow missing limbs, albeit slowly and rather painfully. But beyond their restorative properties, Halo devices will also vastly enhance the physical capabilities of their hosts, rendering them into quasi-superhumans. Over time, the individual will find that their senses have become superbly attuned, such that they may hear, see, feel, and so on, at a level of detail unmatched by unaugmented humans. Their strength is not just restored to that of their youth, but entirely exceeded by orders of magnitude. Finally, they will find they can shrug off all but the most grievous of injuries as easily as one would ignore the buzzing of a bothersome insect, regenerating from an otherwise mortal stab wound as fast as a normal human could scab over a paltry paper cut. From the perspective of the host of the Halo device, at first all will seem perfect. At last, they have the eternal youth they so craved, without the innumerable dangers to body and soul that come with seeking such boons from the ruinous powers. The extraordinary attenuation of their strength, agility, and sensory systems are just another added bonus, though the noble lord, in all of their arrogant boastfulness, will likely claim that they were always this strong, and that this was just a return to normal form. However, this all then begs the question. If these devices only function as a panacea to entropy itself, miraculously negating all injury and senility, then why is the possession of one enough to get yourself branded as an arch-heretic and sentenced to an immediate death? Why did the noble ultramarines not affix one of these artifacts to their Lord Gilliman when he was held in stasis for millennia so that he would be healed of the mortal wound dealt to him by his traitorous brother Fulgrim? Further, why have we not melded one of these devices to the sacred flesh of the Master of Mankind, so that he may once more be granted with the sufficient strength and health to be freed from his immobile and agonized existence atop the Golden Throne? Well, unbeknownst to most, outside of the elite of the Astartes, the Inquisition, senior tech priests, and other such need-to-know individuals, these devices actually bear the greatest of costs, and as the saying goes, there is no such thing as a free lunch. As soon as some poor soul allows a Halo device to burrow into their flesh, they have unknowingly doomed themselves to lose everything they have, everything they will ever have, and everything that makes them who they are as an individual. This decline starts slowly, beginning with the subject who has utilized the Halo device, gradually noticing that earthly delights, like food or drink, no longer bring them any pleasure. Even the most lavish of feasts will taste like ash, and a cold drink on a hot, dry day will offer their parched throat with no refreshment. The host of the Halo device will then begin to suffer wild mood swings, leaping from the pinnacle of manic joy to the nadir of utter despair in the blink of an eye. Tranquility, rage, happiness, sorrow, and so on and so forth will whip through them like a ceaseless whirlwind as their mind is warped further and further by the Halo device's malign influence. As time goes on, the host of the device will soon be denied the velvety caress of a restful night's sleep, no longer able to find a reprieve from the newfound horrors wrought upon their body and mind, as they will only require a short rest once every few days. Admittedly, many of us would likely embrace the ability to forgo the growing weariness of our bodies, and yet there is an unseen curse behind this boon. The scant few hours a host is able to seize will be plagued by debilitating nightmares, consisting of alien vistas beneath unknown stars, revealing bizarre cities with impossible geometries and architecture. Such visions will only grow stronger with time, eventually appearing with each blink, often leading the individual to wish for nothing more than to gouge out their own eyes, though, of course, the device would then just regenerate them in a cruel act of kindness. Even if the host recognizes the source of all these horrors and wishes to undo their mistake, once the device has bonded to a host, it is already far too late. None within the Imperium have yet discovered a method of removing a Halo device without killing the host. Even if one were to have the device bound to a distal limb or an extremity such as the palm of their hand, then an amputation would lead to their instant demise, as sure as if they had instead removed their head or heart. I dearly wish that mere mood swings and restless nights could be the extent of the device's horrors. Perhaps then, the Inquisition would not have to keep such an extensive vigil toward any possibility of these devices changing hands, and our species would be spared many unspeakable atrocities inflicted upon it. However, this is not the case, and I'm afraid that it only gets worse from here. Once the Halo device has been bonded to a human for several standard years, the host enters the secondary phase of their transformation. The side effects of the device, both beneficial and malignant, will begin to accelerate. Additionally, the device will also begin to merge with the cellular makeup of the host's body, eventually being absorbed and overgrown by a new layer of skin as the accursed device digs itself deeper and deeper into their flesh. Except this will not be mere skin or scar tissue. No, the tissues concealing this alien machine may morph into a variety of horrid forms, such as desiccated cold flesh resembling that found on an embalmed corpse or a hardened chitinous carapace, reminiscent of the bio-armors of a tyrannid. This is hardly the only way in which the host's body will be warped over the years, and to be completely fair, not all of these changes are negative. At this stage, the host will have achieved reflexes, strength, and durability that are rare outside the Emperor's Astartes. They will be able to regenerate from almost any damage and will no longer be bound by their primitive biological needs, shedding such primitive requirements as eating, drinking, or sleeping. Yet once again, this boon is not quite a perfect blessing. The host of the device will be burdened with overwhelming urges and desires that they simply must indulge in, lest they grow sickly, weak, and mentally unstable. These bizarre addictions vary wildly, with some hosts desperately wishing to spend long periods of time in total darkness, while others crave the opposite, bathing themselves in the scorching rays of solar radiation for many hours on end. But these eccentric behaviors are relatively harmless when compared to the ravenous hunger and thirst that inevitably awakens within the secondary stage of their inexorable transformation. Despite no longer requiring biological sustenance, the host will now need to satisfy an insatiable craving for human flesh and an unquenchable thirst for blood, bile, and even cranial fluids, like some disgusting hybrid of the Wendigos and vampires of Terran myth. I would call such horrific consumption cannibalism, but in all honesty, I am not entirely sure that term applies. Cannibalism would imply that the wretch sinking its teeth into the flesh of their fellows is themselves still a human. But at this stage, I'm not confident that the twisted bearer of the Halo device could still qualify. Regardless of the semantics of the situation, this horrifying hunger will inevitably lead to a string of disappearances in the immediate area surrounding the host. The servants who are still loyal to their ghoulish master will be compelled to set out and fetch menial wastrels to be feasted upon, with their refusal almost certainly leading to their own consumption. Perhaps they will use a lure of a shockingly high-paying job, sure to attract the downtrodden and impoverished citizens of a bustling hive world. If the host held an influential position, such as being the planetary governor, then they might simply deploy their personal guard to round up a portion of the populace under the guise of it being part of the imperial tithe. Regardless, these poor souls will never be seen again, destined to be devoured by the voracious predator wearing the skin of what was once still a human. However, these innocent citizens are not the only things being devoured. As time goes by, the host of the Halo device will begin to lose large portions of their memory. Tender moments with loved ones, their finest accomplishments, the warmth of true friendship. Every experience that makes us human will be slowly yet surely stripped away. As an insidious twist, the Halo device will then fill this empty space with new, foreign memories. It fills the void of these lost moments in time with knowledge of long-lost alien languages and memories of Xeno's civilizations, no doubt those of the alien species responsible for this foul creation. Yet, despite all of the horrific changes, despicable urges, and of the loss of their own humanity, the worst is still yet to come. The tertiary stage of this nightmarish transformation will take place solar decades after the host first made the awful mistake of bonding with a Halo device. By this point, they will have lost all vestigial traces of their old humanity, with perhaps the only human element to remain being of their vaguely humanoid shape. But on closer inspection, even the most slow-witted of dullards will be able to immediately tell that this creature is markedly inhuman. The malformed tissue around the initial implantation site will have spread across the host's entire body, leaving them to resemble anything from a barely strung together corpse to a wretched hybrid of man and insect. At a cellular level, there will no longer be any discernible difference between the host and of the device, with the two having fully fused into their new disgusting amalgam. Additionally, the hands of this thing that was once human will almost invariably stretch with long talons of bone sprouting from each fingertip like the vicious claws of a carnadon. Thanks to their inhuman strength, the host will no longer need to rely upon any weapons, as they may simply tear through their adversaries, rending them asunder with each slash of their razor-sharp talons. The host's eyes will quite literally shine with an alien bioluminescence, yet the only thing one will find lurking behind that radiant gaze is a malicious intent towards all of mankind. Their shattered mind will have become a twisted fusion of the scattered memories from a long-extinct alien species, newly motivated by the desires and inherent drive of humanity. By this point, the durability, reflexes, and strength of the dreaded creature will have reached their absolute zenith. With but the flick of a wrist, it may separate a man's head clean from his shoulders, or rip a charging bull grox in twain with only a modicum of effort. They can survive for extended periods in the frigid vacuum of space and regenerate from hails of lasgun fire and bolter shells with ease. The host can still be damaged to the point where they will appear dead, But if the body is not burned or entirely destroyed, then it may simply regenerate over a short few days, and upon waking, they will be ravenously hungry and eager to take revenge. Some apocryphal sources even claim that if you were to entirely vaporize a creature at this stage, leaving naught but ash and dust, that they could yet still be resurrected, though this process would require a third party for assistance. Such a blasphemous rite supposedly requires pouring a copious quantity of human blood into the ashes, then followed by either a heavy dousing of radiation or an application of the Mechanicus's motive force. At this point, there is a chance that the host will regenerate from death, and in a whirlpool of blood, bone, muscle, and unnatural energies, they will emerge from the blood-soaked ashes, reborn and ravenous for flesh. And there we have it. What at first glance appears to be nothing more than a harmless tchotchke can result in the birth of an enemy of mankind as strong and durable as a fallen Astartes, as insatiable as a Tyranid, as agile as a Harlequin solitaire, as ageless as the Necrons, and even potentially possessing the resurrective powers of a demon. Each of the worst traits of mankind's greatest foes, all rolled into one human Xenos hybrid abomination. It is little wonder, then, that the Inquisition will order for the complete destruction of any Halo device or bonded individual, with there being absolutely no room for mercy. Understandably, this has been their policy since first encountering the curious devices. And as chance would have it, we do know of the events which transpired on that first fateful day. It was during the twilight years of the 36th millennium when the venerable explorator Archimagos Cronus catalogued the discovery of a number of small curios in a region which would one day be known as the Calixis sector. These devices matched with the apocryphal descriptions of dangerous alien archaeotech that had existed among the sector's sparse population, but seemed upon first glance to be entirely inert and harmless, yet deemed to be of interest purely for their impressively preserved nature. After having no luck unraveling their mysteries by visual analysis, Auspex scans, or the like, the Archimagus had the devices packed up and put into storage for the remainder of the expedition. It was not until many decades later, when the fleet finally returned to the forge world of Stragos, that the nightmarish properties of the device would at last come to light. I shall admit that even one such as I am not privy to the exact details of what happened on Stragos, as the Mechanicus went to a great deal of effort to expunge any and all traces of knowledge from the event, and have since suppressed any mention of the encounter from all official records. However, whatever dire events may have transpired within that planet-spanning industrial complex were enough for both the Machine Cult and Ordo Xenos to declare that the lives of those who deal in such obscene artifacts are to be forfeit, now and forevermore. Further, a great deal of resources were immediately channeled towards a permanent effort in hunting down those who may have come into contact with the devices, and more still, to prevent any others from ever being uncovered. We need look no further for a perfect example of just such a purge than of the events of the infamous Sinophian prosecution performed some 3,000 years on. The host of this Halo device in particular was the scion of a renowned and tremendously wealthy mercantile house residing upon the frontier world of Sinophia Magna. Approximately a century before the commencement of the Angevin Crusade in the 39th millennium, this abomination came to the attention of one Lord Inquisitor Ozymandias Ruthven. Rumors claimed that this baron, whose influence could be felt across the segmentum obscurus all the way to the edge of the segmentum solar itself, was possessed of unnatural powers and had seemingly become entirely immortal. Of course, the Lord Inquisitor was unimpressed with this latter notion. Any enemy of mankind can be purged from existence, and so he set out to do just that. Upon further investigation, the crimes and atrocities committed by this pariah of humanity were so utterly repulsive and extensive that the Lord Inquisitor deemed it necessary to execute not just the host of the Halo device, but the entirety of their house, their vassals, and every other associate who enabled such horrific acts to take place. One can only imagine the countless victims of this loathsome, bloated parasite's crimes. All the lives snuffed out and forced down the gullet of a wretched coward, too afraid to accept the inevitability of their own end with dignity. Forbidden sources claim that the Sinophian persecution came to a close, with the Lord Inquisitor having to resort to trapping the baleful host of the device within a spacecraft and sending it hurtling into the system's parental star, so that they may be burned into oblivion and to never again plague this galaxy with their foul presence. If this is true, then the blasphemous ritual which I previously described would likely be impossible to perform, and so we must commend the Inquisitor's choice of method for its undeniable thoroughness. With all that I have said, I do believe that we should ask ourselves a few questions pertaining to the nature of these diabolical devices. Firstly, we have to wonder, if the sickening transformation initiated by the Halo devices is intentional or unintentional. It might just be that this is all the accidental result of the devices being utilized by a species they were never designed for, and that the users are simply victims to a technology which never had our feeble bodies in mind. If this is the case, then it certainly speaks to the wondrous power held by this extinct race at their peak, that such horrors could be wrought upon the galaxy by some sorry fool for picking up what may very well have been a trifling bauble of their species. Alternatively, maybe the architects of these devices really did design them with the intention of endlessly warping and tormenting whichever poor sap picked one of the devices up in the far future by slowly eroding their mind, identity, and form. This would point towards a far-sighted wickedness and a desire to produce a malignancy through time at such a scale that it may just surpass that of the homunculi covens of the Drukhari. But, my dearest friends, there is perhaps a purpose far more sinister than this. For you see, there are two details which I have neglected to mention until now. Firstly, if a host is ever truly killed, yet the damage received was not enough to entirely destroy the Halo device, then it may emerge from the remains completely intact, despite being bonded at a seemingly inseparable cellular level. There it will sit, ready and waiting for someone to come along and find it, beginning this horrific cycle anew, unless, of course, the individual who ended its precious host knows better and utilizes some suitably destructive method to annihilate it. Secondly, Halo devices are, for lack of a better word, rather picky. With very few exceptions, the vast majority of Halo devices encountered over the years won't function if the host presented to them is a psyker, is possessed by a demon, or is a worshipper of the ruinous powers. We will touch on an exception to the rule soon, but thus far, we have no clear understanding as to why the majority of the Halo devices will reject a psychic host, yet it still presents us with a number of disturbing possibilities. It could be that this was simply a reasonable precaution introduced by their creators to prevent anyone with a risk of being overtaken by the warp from becoming a scourge to the Xenos architects themselves. Alternatively, some have speculated that the devices may simply wish for their host to have no masters nor influences other than itself. This would imply that these devices have some degree of sentience, or even sapience, possibly to the point where we could speculate that the host's unique transformation might be entirely designed by the needs and whims of the device. The prime example of this would be found in the curious Halo device known as the Sycorus Worm. This was first encountered in all of its true horror upon a derelict ship en route from the Coronis Expanse, drifting back towards the Calixis sector. The story goes that it was initially discovered on an expedition, where it appeared to be nothing more than an object of interest, a small curio, around 15 centimeters in length, shaped as a maggot formed of dull brass. It lay inert when the captain examined it. However, it was not until the ship's navigator began their own investigation that the device sprung into life. Slithering up, the worm crawled into the third eye of the mutant, latching on and suckling deeply off of the raw energies of the warp before initiating the previously described transformation within the poor Psyker. Interestingly, the empowered navigator then seemed to acquire the ability to reanimate the dead. Strung up on invisible strands of energy as warp puppets who would violently attack any to dare threaten their host. In the end, the corrupted navigator was put down by a rogue trader known as Sarvis Trask, after he had purchased a writ of claim, granting him the rights to salvage whatever remained of the missing vessel. But as the host died, the worm simply slithered away, never to be seen nor heard from again. This all gives us a lot to think about, with the most obvious question being of why did this worm wait until it found a Psyker to bind to? Why did it not simply meld with the ship's captain who first held it? Well, this all comes back to our previous point on the supposed sapience of these devices. If indeed the worm was preferentially waiting to choose a psychic host so as to manipulate their connection to the warp, then it could suggest some degree of intelligence, perhaps meaning that they are far more insidious hunters than we would have otherwise liked to believe. If true, then we should also wonder if the other Halo devices are also choosing their victims, perhaps only melding with a host if they somehow detect some sense of power or influence. There is no real way to prove this over the idea that they are just opportunistic parasites. But nonetheless, it is quite an interesting, albeit sinister, theory. We should also consider the possibility that perhaps the original creators of the devices might have had a grim purpose in mind for their eventual hosts. Given that alongside the host's body, that the device also manipulates the victim's memories, could these devices have been designed to act as a backup of the consciousness of one of these extinct aliens, designed to overwrite the mind and body of whatever species came across it in the future? Might they even hold the very souls of these aliens as the soul stones of the Eldari do? This could then suggest that the Halo devices are actually choosing their victims so as to provide their extinct consciousness with a new body to inhabit, which would be best suited for achieving their nefarious goals. Thus, it then makes sense as to why they often bond with figures from the imperial aristocracy, as those nobles would have the wealth and resources necessary in order to spread their influence far and wide. It could also mean that the previously described Sycharus worm actually contained the preserved consciousness of a psychic member of their species, thusly explaining as to why it needed to control a psyker, as it could then properly utilize its old powers. Without any method of cracking these abhorrent devices open and seeing what makes them tick, I fear we will never know the truth. Still, it is a rather nightmarish theory that these devices are somehow bringing back the old consciousnesses of an extinct alien species to overwhelm and overwrite the minds of the innocent, only so that they may feast upon the flesh of humanity. But that is all the more reason to be ever vigilant for traces of these foul aberrations of technology, else we may find mankind to be under attack by a resurrected species of nigh-indestructible, homicidally insane xenos that should have stayed dead. Thus, if you ever notice the telltale signs, such as an elderly individual suddenly looking much younger than even the finest rejuvenate treatments could achieve, while covering themselves in ostentatious clothes that utterly cloak their body from view, with a string of disappearances in the area, and perhaps the faintest hint of blood on their breath, stay well away. No matter how zealous your faith in the Emperor, or righteous your hatred of the enemies of humanity may be, directly confronting this thing alone is a fool's game. Instead, alert the nearest member of the Adeptus Arbites of what you have seen, and that you believe an arch-heretic lurks amongst us. If all goes well, they shall pass word to their superiors, who shall pass it on to the planetary governor, and so on until word reaches an inquisitor of the Ordo Xenos. If your suspicions are then proven true, have faith that the Inquisition will do whatever is necessary to purge your world of this repugnant stain upon humanity's heritage. But if the individual in question is, Emperor forbid, the governor themselves, or perhaps even one above them, such as a rogue trader, then I'm afraid the only course of action is to get off world as swiftly as possible in search of some other way to contact the nearest agents of the Inquisition. For if you are to remain, and the host becomes privy to your revelation, then odds are that you may very well be the next sorry soul to be disappeared off the streets, destined now to be devoured in that loathsome creature's gullet. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all for listening to this sermon on the Halo devices in its entirety, and to our honored guest for providing the in-depth knowledge needed to explore such a mysterious topic. But for now, as I close this chapter once more, I will wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.